love of men is a frigid thing. A mountain stream, only 3 steps from the ice. We're his. We are his. Oh, Stormfather. We are his. It is but 1,000 days. And the other storm comes.
Collected on the first day of the week Pala of the month Shash of the year 1171, 31 seconds before death. Subject was a dark-eyed pregnant woman of middle years. The child did not survive.
Zeth, son Valano, truthless of Shinovar, wore white on the day he was to kill a king. The white clothing was a Parshendi tradition, foreign to him. But he did as his masters required and did not ask for an explanation. He sat in a large stone room baked by enormous fire pits that cast a garish light upon the revelers, causing beads of sweat to form on their skin as they danced and drank. Some fell to the ground red-faced, the revelry too much for them, their stomachs proving to be inferior wineskins. They looked as if they were dead, at least until their friends carried them out of the feast hall to waiting beds. Seth did not sway to the drums, drink the sapphire wine, or stand to dance. He sat on a bench at the back, a still servant in white robes. Few at the treaty signing celebration noticed him. He was just a servant, and Shin were easy to ignore. Most out here in the East thought Seth's kind were docile and harmless. They were generally right. The beat shook Zeth like a quartet of thumping hearts, pumping waves of invisible blood through the room. Zeth's masters, who were dismissed as savages by those in more civilized kingdoms, sat at their own tables. There were men with skin of black marbled with red, the Parshendi they were named, cousins to the more docile servant peoples known as Parshmen in most of the world, an oddity. They did not call themselves Parshendi. This was the Alephi name for them. It meant, roughly, Parshmen who can think. Neither side seemed to see that as an insult. The Parshendi had brought the musicians. At first, the Alephi Light Eyes had been hesitant. To them, drums were bass instruments of the common dark-eyed people. But wine was the great assassin of both tradition and propriety. And now the Alephi elite danced with abandon. Zeth stood and began to pick his way through the room. The revelry had lasted long enough. Even the king had retired hours ago, but many still celebrated. As he walked, Zeth was forced to step around Dalinar Kholin, the king's own brother, who slumped drunken at a small table. The aging, but powerfully built man kept waving away those who tried to encourage him to bed. Where was Yasna, the king's daughter? Elikar, the king's son and heir, sat at the high table, ruling the feast in his father's absence. He was in conversation with two men, a dark-skinned Azish man who had an odd patch of pale skin on his cheek, and a thinner, Alethi-looking man who kept glancing over his shoulder. The heir's feasting companions were unimportant. Seth stayed far from the heir, skirting the sides of the room, passing the drummers. Music spreads zipped through the air around them, the tiny spirits taking the form of spinning translucent ribbons. As Zeth passed the drummers, they noted him. They would withdraw soon, along with all the other Parshendi. They did not seem offended. They did not seem angry. And yet they were going to break their treaty of only a few hours. It made no sense. But Zeth did not ask questions. At the edge of the room, he passed rows of unwavering azure lights that bulged out where wall met floor. They held sapphires infused with stormlight. Profane. How could the men of these lands use something so sacred for mere illumination? Worse, the Alethi scholars were said to be close to creating new shard blades. Seth hoped that was just wishful boasting. For if it did happen, the world would be changed. Likely in a way that ended with people in all countries, from distant Thelena to towering Yar-Kaved, speaking Alethi to their children. They were a grand people, these Alethi, Even drunk, there was a natural nobility to them. Tall and well-made, the men dressed in dark silk coats that buttoned down the sides of the chest and were elaborately embroidered in silver or gold. Each one looked a general on the field. The women were even more splendid. They wore grand silk dresses, tightly fitted, the bright colors a contrast to the dark tones favored by the men. The left sleeve of each dress was longer than the right one, covering the hand. Alethi had an odd sense of propriety. Their pure black hair was pinned up atop their heads, either in intricate weavings of braids or in loose piles. It was often woven with gold ribbons or ornaments, along with gems that glowed with stormlight. Beautiful. Profane, but beautiful. Seth left the feasting chamber behind. Just outside, he passed the doorway into the beggar's feast. It was an Alethi tradition, a room where some of the poorest men and women in the city were given a feast complementing that of the king and his guests. A man with a long gray and black beard slumped in the doorway, smiling foolishly, though whether from wine or a weak mind, Zeth could not tell.
Hey! Have you seen me?
He reached for a wineskin. So it was drink, after all. Seth brushed by, continuing past a line of statues depicting the 10 heralds from ancient Vorin theology. Yzerizay, Ishi, Kalek, Talanalat. He counted off each one and realized there were only 9 here. One was conspicuously missing. Why had Shalash's statue been removed? King Gavilar was said to be very devout in his Vorin worship. Too devout by some people's standards. The hallway here curved to the right, running around the perimeter of the domed palace. They were on the king's floor, 2 levels up, surrounded by rock walls, ceiling, and floor. That was profane. Stone was not to be trod upon. But what was he to do? He was truthless. He did as his masters demanded. Today, that included wearing white. Loose white trousers tied at the waist with a rope, and over them, a filmy shirt with long sleeves open at the front. White clothing for a killer was a tradition among the Parshendi. Although Zeth had not asked, his masters had explained why. White to be bold. White to not blend into the night. White to give warning. For if you were going to assassinate a man, he was entitled to see you coming. Seth turned right, taking the hallway directly toward the king's chambers. Torches burned on the walls, their light unsatisfying to him. A meal of thin broth after a long fast. Tiny flamespren danced around them like insects made solely of congealed light. The torches were useful to him. He reached for his pouch and the spheres it contained, but then he hesitated when he saw more of the blue lights ahead. A pair of stormlight lamps hanging on the wall, brilliant sapphires glowing at their hearts. Seth walked up to one of these, holding out his hand to cup it around the glass-shrouded gemstone.
You there!
There were 2 guards at the intersection, double guard, for there were savages abroad in Kolinar this night. True, those savages were supposed to be allies now, but alliances could be shallow things indeed. This one wouldn't last the hour. Seth looked as the 2 guards approached. They carried spears. They weren't light eyes, and were therefore forbidden the sword. Their painted red breastplates were ornate, however, as were their helms. They might be dark-eyed, but they were high-ranking citizens with honored positions in the royal guard. Stopping a few feet away, the guard at the front gestured with his spear.
Go on now. This is no place for you.
He had tan Alethi skin and a thin mustache that ran all the way around his mouth, becoming a beard at the bottom. Zeth didn't move.
Well, what are you waiting for?
Seth drew forth the stormlight. It streamed into him, siphoned from the 2 sapphire lamps on the walls, sucked in as if by his deep inhalation. The stormlight raged inside of him, and the hallway suddenly grew darker, falling into shade like a hilltop cut off from the sun by a transient cloud. Seth could feel the light's warmth, its fury, like a tempest that had been injected directly into his veins. The power of it was invigorating, but dangerous. It pushed him to act, to move, to strike. Holding his breath, he clung to the stormlight. He could still feel it leaking out. Stormlight could be held for only a short time, a few minutes at most. It leaked away the human body to porous a container. He had heard that the Voidbringers could hold it in perfectly. But then, did they even exist? His punishment declared that they didn't. His honor demanded that they did. Afire with holy energy, Zeth turned to the guards. They could see that he was leaking stormlight, wisps of it curling from his skin like luminescent smoke. The lead guard squinted, frowning. Zeth was sure the man had never seen anything like it before. As far as he knew, Zeth had killed every stonewalker who had ever seen what he could do.
What are you? Spirit or man?
What am I?
A bit of light leaked from his lips as he looked past the man down the long hallway.
I'm sorry.
Zeth blinked. Lashing himself to that distant point down the hallway, Stormlight raged from him in a flash, chilling his skin, and the ground immediately stopped pulling him downward. Instead, he was pulled toward the distant point. It was as if, to him, the direction had suddenly become down. This was a basic lashing, first of his three kinds of lashings. It gave him the ability to manipulate whatever force, Spren, or God it was that held men to the ground. With this lashing, he could bind people or objects to different surfaces or in different directions. From Zeth's perspective, the hallway was now a deep shaft down which he was falling, and the two guards stood on one of the sides. They were shocked when Zeth's feet hit them, one for each face, throwing them over. Zeth shifted his view and lashed himself to the floor. The light leaked from him. The floor of the hallway again became down, and he landed between the two guards, clothes crackling and dropping flakes of frost. He rose, beginning the process of summoning his shard blade. One of the guards fumbled for his spear. Zeth reached down, touching the soldier's shoulder while looking up. He focused on a point above him while willing the light out of his body and into the guard, lashing the poor man to the ceiling. Light trailing from his form, he crashed into the ceiling and dropped his spear. To kill. It was the greatest of sins. And yet here Zeth stood, truthless, profanely walking on stones used for building. And it would not end. As truthless, there was only one life he was forbidden to take. And that was his own. At the tenth beat of his heart, his shard blade dropped into his waiting hand. It formed as if condensing from mist, water beating along the metal length. His shard blade was long and thin, edged on both sides, smaller than most others. Zeth swept it out, carving a line in the stone floor and passing through the second guard's neck. As always, the shard blade killed oddly. Though it cut easily through stone, steel, or anything inanimate, the metal fuzzed when it touched living skin. It traveled through the guard's neck without leaving a mark, but once it did, the man's eyes smoked and burned. They blackened, shriveling up in his head, and he slumped forward, dead. The shard blade did not cut living flesh. It severed the soul itself. The first guard had managed to get to his feet, even though they were planted on the ceiling of the hallway.
Shardbearer! A shardbearer assaults the King's Hall! To arms!
Finally.
Zeth's use of stormlight was unfamiliar to the guards, but they knew a shard blade when they saw one. Zeth bent down and picked up the spear that had fallen from above. As he did so, he released the breath he'd been holding since drawing in the stormlight. It sustained him while he held it, but those two lanterns hadn't contained much of it, so he would need to breathe again soon. The light began to leak away more quickly now, and he wasn't holding his breath. Zeth set the spear's butt against the stone floor, then looked upward. The guard above stopped shouting, his eyes opening wide as the tails of his shirt began to slip downward, the earth now reasserting its dominance. The light steaming off his body dwindled. He looked down at Zeth, down at the spear tip pointing directly at his heart. Violet spear spren crawled out of the stone ceiling around him. The light ran out. The guard fell. Zeth let the spear fall away. Shard blade in hand, he turned down a side corridor following the map he'd memorized. He ducked around a corner and flattened himself against the wall just as a troop of guards reached the dead men. His instructions were clear. Kill the king, but be seen doing it. Let the Alethi know he was coming and what he was doing. Why? Why did the Parshendi agree to this treaty only to send an assassin the very night of its signing? More gemstones glowed on the walls of the hallway here. King Gavilar liked lavish display, and he couldn't know that he was leaving sources of power for Zeth to use in his lashings. The things Zeth did hadn't been seen for millennia. Histories from those times were all but non-existent, and the legends were horribly inaccurate. Zeth peeked back out into the corridor. One of the guards at the intersection saw him.
There he is!
Zeth made sure they got a good look, then ducked away. He drew in the stormlight from the lanterns. His body came alive with it, and his speed increased, his muscles bursting with energy. Light became a storm inside of him. His blood thundered in his ears. It was terrible and wonderful at the same time. Two corridors down, one to the side. He threw open the door of a storage room, then hesitated a moment, just long enough for a guard to round the corner and see him before dashing into the room. Preparing for a full lashing, he raised his arms and commanded the stormlight to pool there, causing the skin to burst alight with radiance. Then he flung his hand out toward the doorframe, spraying white luminescence across it like paint. He slammed the door just as the guards arrived. The stormlight held the door in the frame with the strength of 100 arms. A full lashing bound objects together, holding them fast until the stormlight ran out. It took longer to create and drained stormlight far more quickly than a basic lashing. Seth crossed the room in rapid strides, weaving around the shrouded furniture that had been stored there. It was of red cloth and deep, expensive woods. He reached the far wall, and preparing himself for yet another blasphemy, he raised his shard blade and slashed horizontally through the dark gray stone. The rock sliced easily. A shard blade could cut any inanimate object. Two vertical slashes followed, then one across the bottom, cutting a large square block. He pressed his hand against it, willing stormlight into the stone. He looked over his shoulder and focused on the shaking door, lashing the block in that direction. Frost crystallized on his clothing. Lashing something so large required a great deal of stormlight. The tempest within him stilled, like a storm reduced to a drizzle. He stepped aside. The large stone block shuddered, sliding into the room. Normally, moving the block would have been impossible. Its own weight would have held it against the stones below. Yet now, that same weight pulled it free. For the block, the direction of the room's door was down. The block slid free of the wall and tumbled through the air, smashing furniture. The soldiers finally broke through the door, staggering into the room just as the enormous block crashed into them. Seth turned his back and stepped through his new hole, entering the hallway outside. He walked slowly, drawing stormlight from the lamps he passed, siphoning it to him and stoking anew the tempest within. As the lamps dimmed, the corridor darkened. A thick wooden door stood at the end, and as he approached, small fierce brands shaped like globs of purple goo began to wriggle from the masonry, pointing toward the doorway. They were drawn by the terror being felt on the other side. Zeth pushed the door open, entering the last corridor leading to the king's chambers. Tall red ceramic vases lined the pathway, and they were interspersed with nervous soldiers. They flanked a long, narrow rug. It was red, like a river of blood. The spearmen in front didn't wait for him to get close. They broke into a trot, lifting their short throwing spears. Zeth slammed his hand to the side, pushing stormlight into the doorframe. Using the third and final type of lashing, a reverse lashing. This one worked differently from the other two. It did not make the doorframe emit stormlight. Indeed, it seemed to pull nearby light into it, giving it a strange penumbra. The spearmen threw, and Zeth stood still, hand on the doorframe. A reverse lashing required his constant touch, but took comparatively little stormlight. During one, anything that approached him, particularly lighter objects, was instead pulled toward the lashing itself. The spears veered in the air, splitting around him and slamming into the wooden frame. As he felt them hit, Zeth leaped into the air and lashed himself to the right wall. He immediately reoriented his perspective. To his eyes, he wasn't standing on the wall, the soldiers were. The blood-red carpet streaming between them like a long tapestry. Seth bolted down the hallway, striking with his shard blade, shearing through the necks of two men who had thrown spears at him. Their eyes burned, and they collapsed. The other guards had trouble. They were disoriented by the oddity of striking at someone who hung on the wall. Zeth flipped into the air, tucking into a roll, and lashed himself back to the floor. He hit the ground in the midst of the soldiers, completely surrounded but holding a shard blade. According to legend, the shard blades were first carried by the Knights Radiant uncounted ages ago, gifts of their god granted to allow them to fight horrors of rock and flame, dozens of feet tall, foes whose eyes burned with hatred. The Void Bringers. When your foe had skin as hard as stone itself, steel was useless. Something supernatural was required. Zeth rose from his crouch, loose white clothes rippling, jaw clenched against his sins. He struck out, his weapon flashing with reflected torchlight. Elegant wide swings, three of them, one after another. He could neither close his ears to the screams that followed, nor avoid seeing the men fall. They dropped around him like toys knocked over by a child's careless kick. If the blade touched a man's spine, he died, eyes burning. If it cut through the core of a limb, it killed that limb. One soldier stumbled away from Zeth, arm flopping uselessly on his shoulder. He would never be able to feel it or use it again. Zeth lowered his shard blade, standing among the cinder-eyed corpses. Here, in Alethkar, men often spoke of the legends of mankind's hard-won victory over the Voidbringers. But when weapons created to fight nightmares were turned against common soldiers, the lives of men became cheap things indeed. Zeth turned and continued on his way, the shard blade, as always, glistening silver and clean. When one killed with a blade, there was no blood. That seemed like a sign. The shard blade was just a tool. It could not be blamed for the murders. The door at the end of the hallway burst open. Seth froze as a small group of soldiers rushed out, ushering a man in regal robes, his head ducked as if to avoid arrows. The soldiers wore deep blue, the color of the King's Guard, and the corpses didn't make them stop and gawk. They were prepared for what a shard bearer could do. They opened a side door and shoved their ward through, several leveling spears at Zeth as they backed out. Another figure stepped from the king's quarters. He wore glistening blue armor made of smoothly interlocking plates. Unlike common plate armor, however, this armor had no leather or mail visible at the joints, just smaller plates, fitting together with intricate precision. The armor was beautiful, the blue inlaid with golden bands around the edges of each piece of plate. The helm ornamented with three waves of small horn-like wings. Shard plate, the customary complement to a shard blade. The newcomer carried a sword as well, an enormous shard blade, 6 feet long, with a design along the blade like burning flames, a weapon of silvery metal that gleamed and almost seemed to glow. A weapon designed to slay dark gods, a larger counterpart to the one Zeth carried. Zeth hesitated. He didn't recognize the armor. He had not been warned that he would be set at this task, and hadn't been given proper time to memorize the various suits of plate or blades owned by the Alethi. But a shardbearer would have to be dealt with before he chased the king. He could not leave such a foe behind. Besides, perhaps a shardbearer could defeat him, kill him, and end his miserable life. His lashings wouldn't work directly on someone in shardplate, and the armor would enhance the man, strengthen him. Seth's honor would not allow him to betray his mission or seek death, but if that death occurred, he would welcome it. The shardbearer struck, and Zeth lashed himself to the side of the hallway, leaping with a twist and landing on the wall. He danced backward, blade held at the ready. The shardbearer fell into an aggressive posture, using one of the swordplay stances favored here in the East. He moved far more nimbly than one would expect for a man in such bulky armor. Shard plate was special, as ancient and magical as the blades it complemented. The shardbearer struck. Zeth skipped to the side and lashed himself to the ceiling as the Shardbearer's blade sliced into the wall. Feeling a thrill at the contest, Zeth dashed forward and attacked downward with an overhand blow, trying to hit the Shardbearer's helm. The man ducked, going down on one knee, letting Zeth's blade cleave empty air. Zeth leaped backward as the Shardbearer swung upward with his blade, slicing into the ceiling. Zeth didn't own a set of plate himself, and didn't care to. His lashings interfered with the gemstones that powered shard plate, and he had to choose one or the other. As the Shardbearer turned, Zeth sprinted forward across the ceiling. As expected, the Shardbearer swung again, and Zeth leaped to the side, rolling. He came up from his roll and flipped, lashing himself to the floor again. He spun to land on the ground behind the Shardbearer. He slammed his blade into the opponent's open back. Unfortunately, there was one major advantage plate offered. It could block a shard blade. Zeth's weapon hit solidly, causing a web of glowing lines to spread out across the back of the armor, and stormlight began to leak free from them. Shard plate didn't dent or bend like common metal. Zeth would have to hit the Shardbearer in the same location at least once more to break through. Zeth danced out of range as the Shardbearer swung in anger, trying to cut at Zeth's knees. The tempest within Zeth gave him many advantages, including the ability to quickly recover from small wounds, but it would not restore limbs killed by a shard blade. He rounded the Shardbearer, then picked a moment and dashed forward. The Shardbearer swung again, but Zeth briefly lashed himself to the ceiling for lift. He shot into the air, cresting over the swing, then immediately lashed himself back to the floor. He struck as he landed. But the Shardbearer recovered quickly and executed a perfect follow-through stroke, coming within a finger of hitting Zeth. The man was dangerously skilled with that blade. Many Shardbearers depended too much on the power of their weapon and armor. This man was different. Zeth jumped to the wall and struck at the Shardbearer with quick, terse attacks, like a snapping eel. The Shardbearer fended him off with wide, sweeping counters. His blade's length kept Zeth at bay.
This is taking too long.
If the king slipped away into hiding, Zeth would fail in his mission, no matter how many people he killed. Each second this fight lasted was another for the king's escape. It was time to be reckless. Zeth launched into the air, lashing himself to the other end of the hallway and falling feet first toward his adversary. The Shardbearer didn't hesitate to swing. But Zeth lashed himself down at an angle, dropping immediately. The shard blade swished through the air above him. He landed in a crouch, using his momentum to throw himself forward and swung at the Shardbearer's side where the plate had cracked. He hit with a powerful blow. That piece of the plate shattered, bits of molten metal streaking away. The Shardbearer dropped to one knee, raising a hand to his side. Zeth raised a foot to the man's side and shoved him backward with a stormlight-enhanced kick. The heavy Shardbearer crashed into the door of the king's quarters, smashing it and falling partway into the room beyond. Zeth left him, ducking instead through the doorway to the right, following the way the king had gone. The hallway here had the same red carpet, and stormlight lamps on the walls gave Zeth a chance to recharge the tempest within. Energy blazed within him again, and he sped up. If he could get far enough ahead, he could deal with the king, then turn back to fight off the Shardbearer. It wouldn't be easy. A full lashing on a doorway wouldn't stop a Shardbearer, and that plate would let the man run supernaturally fast. Zeth glanced over his shoulder. The Shardbearer wasn't following. The man sat up in his armor, looking dazed. Zeth could just barely see him, sitting in the doorway, surrounded by broken bits of wood. Perhaps Zeth had wounded him more than he thought. Or maybe. Zeth froze. He thought of the ducking head of the man who'd been rushed out, face obscured. The Shardbearer still wasn't following.
He's so skilled. It is said that few men can rival Gavilar Kulin's swordsmanship. Could it be?
Zeth turned and dashed back, trusting his instincts. As soon as the Shardbearer saw him, he climbed to his feet with alacrity. Zeth ran faster.
What is the safest place for a king? In the hands of some guards fleeing, or protected in a suit of shardplate left behind, dismissed as a bodyguard? clever.
The formerly sluggish Shardbearer fell into another battle stance. Zeth attacked with renewed vigor, swinging his blade in a flurry of strikes. The Shardbearer,
a king,
aggressively struck out with broad, sweeping blows. Zeth pulled away from one of these, feeling the wind of the weapon passing just inches before him. He timed his next move, then dashed forward, ducking underneath the king's follow-through. The king, expecting another strike at his side, twisted with his arm held protectively to block the hole in his plate. That gave Zeth the room to run past him and into the king's chambers. The king spun around to follow, but Zeth ran through the lavishly furnished chamber, flinging out his hand, touching pieces of furniture he passed. He infused them with stormlight, lashing them to a point behind the king. The furniture tumbled as if the room had been turned on its side, couches, chairs, and tables dropping toward the surprised king. Gavilar made the mistake of chopping at them with his shard blade. The weapon easily sheared through a large couch, but the pieces still crashed into him, making him stumble. A footstool hit him next, throwing him to the ground. Gavilar rolled out of the way of the furniture and charged forward. Plate leaked streams of light from the cracked sections. Zeth gathered himself, then leaped into the air, lashing himself backward and to the right as the king arrived. He zipped out of the way of the king's blow, then lashed himself forward with two basic lashings in a row. Stormlight flashed out of him, clothing freezing, as he was pulled toward the king at twice the speed of a normal fall. The king's posture indicated surprise as Zeth lurched in midair, then spun toward him swinging. He slammed his blade into the king's helm, then immediately lashed himself to the ceiling and fell upward, slamming into the stone roof above. He'd lashed himself in too many directions too quickly, and his body had lost track, making it difficult to land gracefully. He stumbled back to his feet. Below, the king stepped back, trying to get into position to swing up at Zeth. The man's helm was cracked, leaking stormlight, and he stood protectively, defending the side with a broken plate. The king used a one-handed swing, reaching for the ceiling. Zeth immediately lashed himself downward, judging that the king's attack would leave him unable to get his sword back in time. Zeth underestimated his opponent. The king stepped into Zeth's attack, trusting his helm to absorb the blow. Just as Zeth hit the helm a second time, shattering it, Gavilar punched with his offhand, slamming his gauntleted fist into Zeth's face. Blinding light flashed in Zeth's eyes, a counterpoint to the sudden agony that crashed across his face. Everything blurred, his vision fading, pain, so much pain. Stormlight left him in a rush, and he slammed back into something hard. The balcony doors. More pain broke out across his shoulders as if someone had stabbed him with 100 daggers, and he hit the ground and rolled to a stop, muscles trembling. The blow would have killed an ordinary man.
No time for pain. No time for pain. No time for pain.
He blinked, shaking his head, the world blurry and dark.
Am I blind?
No. It was dark outside. He was on the wooden balcony. The force of the blow had thrown him through the doors.
The shard bearer.
Zeth stumbled to his feet, vision swimming. Blood streamed from the side of his face, and stormlight rose from his skin, blinding his left eye. The light. It would heal him, if it could. His jaw felt unhinged.
Broken?
He dropped his shard blade. A lumbering shadow moved in front of him. The Shardbearer's armor had leaked enough stormlight that the king was having trouble walking. But he was coming. Zeth kneeled, infusing stormlight into the wooden balcony, lashing it downward. The air frosted around him. The tempest roared, traveling down his arms into the wood. He lashed it downward, then did it again. He lashed a fourth time as Gavilar stepped onto the balcony. It lurched under the extra weight. The Shardbearer hesitated. Zeth lashed the balcony downward a fifth time. The balcony support shattered, and the entire structure broke free from the building. Zeth used his final bit of stormlight to lash himself to the side of the building. He fell to the side, passing the shocked Shardbearer, then hit the wall and rolled. The balcony dropped away, the king looking up with shock as he lost his footing. The fall was brief. In the moonlight, Zeth watched solemnly vision still fuzzy, blinded in one eye, as the structure crashed to the stone ground below. Still standing on the side of the wall, Zeth climbed to his feet. He felt weak. He'd used up his stormlight too quickly, straining his body. He stumbled down the side of the building, approaching the wreckage, barely able to remain standing. The king still moved. Shardplate would protect a man from such a fall, but a large length of bloodied wood stuck up through Gavilar's side, piercing him where Zeth had broken the plate earlier. Zeth knelt down, inspecting the man's pain-racked face. Strong features, square chin, black beard flecked with white, striking pale green eyes. Gavilar Colin.
I expected you to come.
Zeth reached underneath the front of the man's breastplate, tapping the straps there. They unfastened, and he pulled the front of the breastplate free, exposing the gemstones on its interior. Two had been cracked and burned out. Three still glowed. Numb, Zeth breathed in sharply, absorbing the light. The storm began to rage again. More life rose from the side of his face, repairing his damaged skin and bones. The pain was still great. Stormlight healing was far from instantaneous. It would be hours before he recovered.
You can tell Thaidakar that he's too late.
I don't know who that is.
Zeth held his hand to the side, resummoning his shard blade.
Then who? Restores? Sadius? I never thought...
My masters are the Parshendi.
The Parshendi? That makes no sense.
Gavilar reached toward his chest, fumbling at a pocket. He pulled out a small, crystalline sphere tied to a chain.
You must take this. They must not get it. Tell my brother. He must find the most important words a man can say.
Gavilar fell still. Zeth hesitated, then knelt down and took the sphere. It was odd, unlike any he'd seen before. Though it was completely dark, it seemed to glow somehow, with a light that was black.
The Parshendi? That makes no sense.
Nothing makes sense anymore.
Zeth tucked the strange sphere away.
It's all unraveling. I am sorry, King of the Alethi. I doubt that you care. Not anymore, at least. At least you won't have to watch the world ending with the rest of us.
Beside the king's body, his shard blade materialized from mist, falling to the stones now that its master was dead. It was worth a fortune. Kingdoms had fallen as men vied to possess a single shard blade.
Tell my brother.
To Zeth's people, a dying request was sacred. He took the king's hand, dipping it in the man's own blood, then used it to scrawl on the wood.
He must find the most important words a man can say.
With that, Zeth escaped into the night. He left the king's shard blade. He had no use for it. The blade Zeth already carried was curse enough.